We have been talking about a holy God the last few weeks. So if you're here for the first time today, or you haven't been tracking with us in this series, I'll say a couple of things to help you kind of keep up with where we're going. I'm going to dive a little bit into the Old Testament, and so you have to track with that a little bit as well. And then we're going to get into the New Testament and talk a little bit about Jesus. So this year marks the 75th anniversary of C.S. Lewis' book, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Some of you might be familiar with that. Some of you may have seen the movie. And in that movie, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, very famous, very well-known scene early in the book or in the movie, where the Pevensey children, so you've got Peter, Susan, Edmund, and... Yeah, I see some of you know the books. I read them as a child. And the Pevensey children end up in this world called Narnia. Narnia is a magical world. There's a white witch. There's talking animals. They're actually at the house of Mr. and Mrs. Beaver. So there's talking beavers. And Mr. Beaver is telling the children about Aslan. Aslan is this lion. He is the Jesus figure. All through the seven books of this whole Narnia series, Aslan is the Jesus figure. And he begins talking about Aslan, explaining it to the children. And one of the children asks Mr. Beaver, what is he like? Is he a man or what is he? He hasn't said he's a lion yet. And he explains he's a lion. He's a great lion. He's the king of the wood. He's the son of the emperor over the seas, describing his magnificence. And then Susan pipes up. She's the older sister and says, is he good? Is he safe? And Mr. Beaver turns to her and says, well, he isn't safe, but he is good. Now, this line is so famous because it perfectly describes the holiness of God. God is not safe. He is holy. He is powerful. God cannot be controlled. God will not be domesticated from a lion, a roaring lion, into a small domesticated kitten. God is all-powerful. God is all-knowing. God is outside of the universe. God is holy, is set apart. He's not human. He's not in this earth. He's not controlled by time. He isn't safe, but he is good. He's perfect. He's all-loving. He's merciful. He's kind. He's everything that you could think or imagine that a God should be. God is everything that you could want in a best friend. Gracious, giving, generous, but he's not safe. Today, my main line for you is going to be, my main point of the sermon, I'll put it up there for you, is that in the old, when you touch God, you die. The new, Jesus' touch brings life. There was an old relationship. There was an old story. Christians call it the Old Testament or the old relationship we had with God. And because of God's holiness, if you touch God, you die. Because we have no right to be near God. But in the New Testament, the new relationship that we can have with God through Jesus Christ, where Jesus touches us and that brings us life. Over the last few weeks, we've kept repeating this line, be holy because God is holy. This is a theme that goes all through the Bible. God first says this to the people of Israel. He says, be holy as I am holy. Jesus says it in his Sermon on the Mount. He says, you should be perfect. Could you imagine this? Jesus declares it to the crowds. You should be perfect just as your heavenly Father is perfect. But nobody's perfect. None of us are holy. None of us are born righteous. None of us are really good. If we look deep into our hearts, we know there's some rotten stuff in there. But Jesus says, be perfect. God calls us to be holy, like a God, to be divine, to be without uncleanness or impurity or shame or evil or wrong. This is what we're called to be. We know that God is untouchable. God is perfect. God is the judge. There are three kind of characteristics of his holiness. We can put that up on the next slide. God's untouchable because he's holy. He's separate. He's outside of this world. He's other. He's transcendent. He's wholly indescribable. If you've ever studied theology and studied God properly, you quickly find out that all of the descriptions that we have for God are actually human descriptions. We take things we understand as humans, like a father, and then we project that onto God. But God is a father, although he describes himself that way in the Bible, I mean, what does that really mean? We can only understand that as an earthly father. We take these ideas of good and say that God is good, but we can only really understand that in the realm of humanity. God being good, I mean, what does that really mean? None of us know. None of us are God. None of us are in heaven. None of us understand. This is God's indescribable nature. He's perfect, meaning he is morally pure. His character is perfect. Every thought that he has is right. Everything that he says is true. God cannot actually lie. It's impossible for him to lie. And he's the judge. He's the Lord. He's the king. He's the ferocious lion, Aslan, full of grace and truth, but also he has this nature about him that's violent, that's powerful, that's untouchable, that you can't come near. So God takes basically the whole Old Testament and the people of Israel to explain to us his holiness. And if anyone's familiar with Christianity, you'll be familiar with these odd laws and rules that God gives the people of Israel. We find them in the book of Leviticus and the book of Numbers. Who's ever trawled through those books of the Bible before? There's a few ginger hands going up. If you put your hand up, you're super duper Christian. So if you want everyone to see how Christian you are, just pop your hand right up there. Yep, I read Leviticus every day. So how is God going to communicate that he is holy, he's separate from the earth, and his people Israel, his chosen people, are separate from all the other nations of the earth? Well, God comes up with these purity laws, or these ritual purity laws, to make sure that show the people when they're unclean and when they're clean. If you were here last week, Pastor Andrew went through this a little bit. There's all these funny laws about eating, the dietary laws in Leviticus 11 about which animals you can eat, which animals you can't eat, which fish you can eat, which fish you can't eat. And there's all these specific rules. There's all these rules about sex and marriage in Leviticus 8, 19, and 20. What's forbidden? Things like incest and adultery and all these, how to do human relationships and sexual relationships. Very detailed laws and descriptors there. And then there's very detailed laws about sacrifice. So if you want to stay clean before God, you've got to sacrifice doves and animals and all of these kinds of things. Now we may, as a Christian, you may think that that's quite unique. But in Old Testament times, all the nations around Israel also practiced similar kind of laws. Sacrificed animals, were concerned about being clean or unclean. You may remember when Jesus came in the first century, the dominant religion of the time was the Greek or the Roman pantheon of gods, Zeus and all these gods. And it was very important to be ritually clean, to do the right sacrifices, to earn the favor of the gods, the god of war, the god of love, the god of the harvest. You know, people were always trying to appease the gods. So this idea was common in ancient times, but quite unusual for us today. And if I can take you a little bit deeper, who wants to do a theology lesson on the Old Testament? Not really, but let's go there, okay? Let's go a little bit deeper today. And I'm sorry if you're new to Christianity because this is getting into the weeds a little bit. All of these weird laws really come down to three different things that God is trying to tell the people of Israel will make them unclean. So they can't go anywhere near God, near his temple, near a priest, because they would be unclean. And unclean isn't necessarily bad, but it's just you're ritually unclean. So it means that you can't come into the temple area. You can't be near the presence of God. They come down to three categories that really sum up what they're all to do with death and the forces of death. The first one is lepra, bodily discharges, and corpses. I told you we're going to get into the weeds. It's going to be a little bit weird for 5 minutes, and then we'll come back to Jesus and it'll all get good at the end, okay? So lepra is actually leprosy. Everyone say leprosy. But it's not leprosy. So what we think of leprosy now, we know in modern science, is like fingers falling off and things with that. When the Bible talks about leprosy, it's not what we understand as modern leprosy. So I'm going to call it lepra, okay? It actually was a skin disease that gave you white, flaky skin. You kind of looked like you were dying. A bit like eczema. Sorry if you got eczema. But it looks a little bit like that. God actually says in Leviticus 13, 45, anyone with such a defiling disease must wear torn clothes, keep their hair unkept, cover the lower part of their face, So like wearing a mask, remember COVID? And cry out, unclean, unclean. As long as they have this disease, they remain unclean. They must live alone. They must live outside the camp. So you're cut off from God. You can never go near the temple. And you could never be in the community with the Israelite people. You have to wear weird clothes and have a weird hairstyle. And you are kept outside of the community. The second one, bodily discharges. So anything coming out of your body. Leviticus 15:31, God says, this is how you will guard the people of Israel from ceremonial uncleanness. Otherwise, they would die, for their impurity would defile my tabernacle that stands among them. So again, any omissions, sorry, it's going to get a bit gross, but semen omissions, menstrual cycles, even sexual intercourse, although these things are natural, they were considered unclean. And people had to go through particular washings and had to have particular times, 3 days or 7 days, that they had to be outside of the camp. They couldn't go near anyone. If they went near anyone, that person would become unclean. And the final one was corpses. And Numbers 19 talks into this. All those who touch a dead human body will be ceremonially unclean for 7 days. They must purify themselves on the third and the seventh days with water. Then they will be purified. So again, corpses, dead bodies, not very common for us today, so it's quite odd. Lepra or leprosy, the Bible calls it, and any bodily discharges. What these things do is they all represent death. So leprosy, you look like you're dying. Corpses, that is actually dead. And bodily discharges is the loss of life. So blood in the menstrual cycle leaving the body is actually the loss of a woman's eggs. And so the loss of life, anything to do with death would make you unclean and not allow you to come near God. I'm going to give you a big quote here to help you understand. This is where I'm getting most of this information from today. It's a book I read called Jesus and the Forces of Death. If you like theology and you want to go deep into this stuff, if you've never understood, why is there all these people with leprosy that Jesus heals? And why can people be clean and unclean and all this stuff in the Old Testament? This book explains the whole system and how Jesus actually deals with it. It's called Jesus and the Forces of Death. I had to read it as part of my studies. But this writer, Thiessen, says, I would suggest, though, that compassion emanates the Jewish purity system. It was a protective and benevolent system intended to preserve God's presence among his people, a presence that could be of considerable danger to humans if they approached God wrongly. See, God is holy. The modern person likes to think of God as casual and familiar and loving and just a very liberal God that welcomes everyone in. But God, in his character, is essentially holy and dangerous and violent. We should be very careful how we approach him. The whole Old Testament tells that story. Access to the sacred space was heavily restricted. So the temple, heavily restricted. Remember, I spoke to you the other week, only the high priest could go into the Holy of Holies where the presence of God dwelled, this is in the Old Testament, once a year. So it was heavily restricted, not out of lack of compassion, but out of the belief that this holy God not only was merciful and loving, but also was a powerful force that could be dangerous. That's why a couple of weeks ago I spoke to you about Isaiah 6, and he encounters the holiness of God, this Old Testament prophet. And what does he say when he sees God in all of his glory? He says, I'm doomed. I'm going to be destroyed. I'm going to be burnt up in flames because I have seen the holiness of God. He knew that he was unclean and he wasn't worthy. And to touch the presence of God meant certain death. But God preserves his life. So you may have read these weird laws in the Old Testament. You may have heard, you might look at Jesus and the lepers and all of these things, the woman with the issue of blood. I'm going to talk about that in a moment, that story, and think this is really odd. But Thiessen helps us understand here that Jesus didn't come into this purity system and these weird Jewish laws to kind of go, these are stupid religious laws. I'm going to break all of them and show everyone how to be cool. No, actually, this whole system is a benevolent, compassionate system set up by God to say, I am holy. I'm like the sun. I'm good for your crops if you're far away, but if you come too close to the sun, you're going to burn up. And so I'm going to build this whole sacrificial system. It's going to be a bit odd, but it's going to help you understand that I am not close and that I am not touchable and that I am God of the universe. Jesus comes into this map of the world. I hope I've given you a little bit of a map of the world, because often we read Jesus as modern people and we read it through our eyes. Australia, Western world, wealthy individuals living in these fantastic countries. We are richer than everyone in human history. It's very hard for us to understand laws and ritual purity and sacrifices and bulls and animals. But this is the world that Jesus came into. And it wasn't only the Jewish world, it was the Roman, pagan, Greek world as well. One thing we do understand is the term leper. Not the literal meaning of it, but we understand it colloquially, don't we? We understand that I'm a leper means somebody that's been banished. I'm a leper in my workplace. No one wants to talk to me. The boss, I'm in the bad books with the boss. I'm like a leper in my family. Means that you've kind of maybe been abandoned by your family. People avoid you in the family. You don't get treated properly. We understand this. We understood this in COVID, didn't we? COVID was about the closest that we will ever come to living in Old Testament times. We were quarantined. We were away from the community. We were considered unclean. We had 5 kilometer radiuses. Even like the leper that had to wear the mask and walk around saying, unclean, unclean. We had to wear masks. We couldn't come near each other. Like, we had a little bit of an understanding of what it might have been like to be a Jew 2,000-3,000 years ago. We understood this. We understand that leper is bad. And everyone knows, even outside of Christianity, that Jesus had this thing where he healed people like this. People that were sick, people that had leprosy. Why did he do it? How could he do it? We're going to look at the book of Mark this morning for about 15 minutes. And then I want to bring us into a time of prayer to finish off today. And I want you to pray for yourself, pray to God. I want you to pray for each other. I want you to pray for people beyond the church. In Mark 1:24, Mark introduces us to Jesus via the voice of a demon, saying, "Why are you interfering with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God." This is a demon speaking through a human being, identifying that Jesus of Nazareth, not just a man, but he is the Holy One of God. In the Gospel of Luke, it's an angel who tells us that Jesus is holy. This angel says to Mary, "So the baby will be born to you. This baby will be holy, and he will be called the Son of God." In John's gospel, he introduces us to the holiness of God through the disciples. In John 6:69, "We know that you are the Holy One of God." The disciples were convinced, "You are the Holy One of God." So now it's not just God of the Old Testament that is holy, but that is God in the person of Jesus Christ. God's holiness, which is dangerous, violent, untouchable, has now come down to earth. No longer just transcendent, other, far away, but now the holiness of God has come near to humanity. What will it do when it begins to interact with the problems, the sicknesses, the diseases of humanity? Let's look at this diagram again. Death, remember, is lepra, bodily discharges, and corpses. Big problem in the first century. Jesus and the walking dead. What does Jesus do when he comes across people with leprosy? They look like they're dead. They're isolated from the community. Let's look at it in Mark chapter 1 and verse 40. A man with leprosy came and knelt in front of Jesus, begging to be healed. "If you are willing, you can heal me and make me clean." Everyone say clean. Now, this isn't morally clean in your heart. This is clean in his body, because he couldn't go to the temple. He couldn't be near God. Because God is untouchable, he would die. But now Jesus in God has come near to him and is about to make him clean. Moved with compassion, verse 41, Jesus reaches out and touched him. "I am willing. I am willing," he said, "be healed." And instantly the leprosy disappeared and the man was healed. Jesus is willing to heal. God is willing to deal with anything, morally, mentally, physically, relationally, that will separate you from God. This is the new covenant in Jesus Christ. Now, Jesus says to the man, this is really interesting, I don't have it on the slide for you, but he says to the man, "Now go to the temple and show yourself to the priest that you are clean." Jesus doesn't subvert all of these funny laws in Leviticus and Numbers. He doesn't say, ha, we're going to break the rules now because we're not religious, we're cool Christians. No, he says he still honors the purity system, which means the man couldn't go into the temple until he went to a priest and a priest said, you don't have leprosy anymore, and kind of signed off on him. Now you can come back into community, you can come back into worship, you can come near the presence of God. So God honors the purity system, but he deals with the source of isolation. He deals with the problem that separates people from God. And in dealing with the leprosy, he's really telling us that he's going to deal with the ultimate source of people's problems, and that is death. Do we have that slide again? Death represents lepra, bodily discharges, corpses. Jesus begins dealing with these problems of uncleanness in order to show us that ultimately he's going to deal with the cause of death, every human's problem. Not only death physically, but death eternally. Jesus begins to walk towards the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader, because his daughter is dying. On the way, he bumps into the woman, a very well-known story about a woman who had an issue of blood. She'd been bleeding, bodily discharge for 12 years. She's got problems. Let's pick it up in verse 28, Mark 5:28. She thought to herself, if I can touch the robe of Jesus, I will be healed. Immediately, the bleeding stopped, and she could feel in her body that she had been healed of her terrible condition. If you remember the story well, Jesus turns around quickly and says, "Who touched me?" He felt the power be drawn out of him. "Who touched me?" His disciples say, "Jesus, there's hundreds of people around you here. Like, everybody's touching you." But Jesus had felt the power be drawn out of him. Now, God is not a God far off that cannot be touched, but God in Jesus Christ is a holy God that anyone can come near. Not only Jew, but Gentile, not only the Jewish nation of Israel, but all nations of the earth, you, me, everyone. All we need to do is reach out in faith and touch him. Jesus turns to her in verse 34 because she comes on her knees and said, "It was me, I touched you." And Jesus looks at her. I love this line. He doesn't say, "He shouldn't have touched me." He doesn't say, "He didn't do it right." He doesn't say any of those things. He says, "Daughter." Speak straight into her heart. Not well done, not good effort, not no daughter, straight to her identity. Daughter of the living God. You are welcome. You are loved. You're not in shame. You're not unclean any longer. Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. Your suffering is over. Interesting contrast here. This woman has an uncontrolled discharge of blood leaking from her body, which separates her from God. Jesus has an uncontrolled discharge of power from his body, which he can't control. There is nothing stopping you from reaching out right now, right today, every minute, every day, and touching Jesus just like this woman. Jesus will not hinder power flowing from him to you to heal your body, to heal your relationships, to heal your mind, to heal your situations. It is not restricted any longer. The holiness of God, the power of God is not restricted any longer. In Jesus, anybody can touch, anybody can heal, anyone can be a son or a daughter of the living God. Jesus continues on. He's held up by this woman with the issue of blood while he was on the way to Jairus's daughter. And people come and say, "It doesn't matter anymore, Jairus, your daughter's dead. She's not sick anymore, she's dead." And Jesus overhears and says, no, she's not dead. Let's keep going, Jairus. This is a synagogue leader. So this, ironically, is somebody who leads the ritual purity system in the synagogue. He's part of the system of being clean or unclean. You can come to God, you can't come to God. Now, his daughter is dead. So all of a sudden, he's pretty open to some new spiritual technology. And Jesus says to him, "It's okay, let's keep going." And they get to the house, they come inside. Jesus said, "She's just sleeping, it's fine. She's not really dead." Everyone goes, ha, 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 ha. Everyone thinks Jesus is a fool. She's clearly dead. Jesus walks in and in verse 41 of chapter 5, holds her hand and he says to her, "Talith kum," which means, "Little girl, get up." Verse 42, "And the girl, who was 12 years old, immediately stood up and walked around." They were overwhelmed and totally amazed. Jesus has power over death itself. Remember the Old Testament? the old relationship that humanity had with God. Next slide, thanks. You touch God and you die. That's the holiness of God. That's one part of the holiness of God. The other side of God's holiness is Jesus, the Holy One of God. The baby that will be born is holy. Oh, holy night. We'll be singing that soon. Jesus now touches and brings life. What was untouchable? A leper, a dead girl. Jesus even walking into that room had become ceremonially unclean. So not only the corpse, but in Jewish law, anything in the room, any blanket that had touched her, Jesus himself became unclean by going even into that room, let alone touching a dead body, which God had said in Leviticus, do not touch a dead body. But Jesus now shows us this other side of God, that his touch actually overrides all untouchability. Some of you feel like you are untouchable. Some of you feel discarded. Some of you feel like you live your life as a leper. You don't fit in. You don't fit right. You're wrong. A lot of you feel shame. We all deal with this sin of shame, feeling like we're an outcast from our community. We're an outcast from our family. Maybe you don't even feel like you fit properly in this church. All of these lies of the enemy come at us. But again and again and again, we see Jesus dealing with these weird Old Testament laws. But really what he's dealing with for us, what we need to understand, he's dealing with the source of death. He's dealing with the source of sin that holds us back. In the gospel, Jesus deals, next slide, thanks, with the ritual impurity that represents death. Ritual being temple practices, sacrifices. So the leper discharges corpses, before dealing with humanity's moral impurity. Everyone say moral impurity. Come on, everyone, moral impurity. So Jesus now doesn't just deal with the ritual impurity with the woman with the issue of blood and the girl who is dead, but he deals with our moral impurity that represents eternal death, not just the first death of this life, but eternal death, which means eternal separation from a holy God. That's what we understand as hell. We understand to be separate from God for all of eternity is going to be hellish. Whatever you think hell is, whatever you can conceive as the worst possible place that any human could ever be, that's what it's like to be separate from God. That's why the Israelite people were desperate to come near to God and to do the sacrifices. And that's why even ancient people who thought that the gods, the pantheon of Greek and Roman gods ruled the earth, were desperate to be, you know, on side with the gods so that these fickle gods would bless their harvest or allow their wife to have a child. Humanity for all time has known there's something up there that we need to be in right standing with, but we all know in our heart, even us as modern people know, that we can't be in right standing with a holy, perfect God because I'm not holy and I'm not perfect. We need a God, not just to Jesus, not to deal with just the ritual impurity, but the moral impurity in our hearts. He overcomes death through his own death and resurrection, bringing life to all who believe. And wasn't it beautiful to see Taylor, Lalani this morning confessing their faith, I believe. I love it. Just young women going, I'm going to live a certain way. I love what Lalani said, I've given my life away to Jesus. And you have, sweetie, and it's the best decision that you'll ever, ever make. To give your life away to Jesus is actually the best way to gain the greatest life that you could ever live. But it takes faith. You've got to believe. It's easy to doubt. It's easy to say, I don't know about God. I don't know about this Christian stuff. It does take faith. There is a gap of faith that you've got to step into, that many of us have stepped into. Let's go back to the Chronicles of Narnia, hey, as we finish off and then we'll pray together. I've been reading with my seven-year-old son the story of The Voyage of the Dawn Treader. Who's read that far? Okay, that's book number 5. All you nerds out there putting your hand up. Book number 5, The Voyage of the Dawn Treader. So now Peter and Susan, the older brother and sister, they're too old to go to Narnia. So the younger two, Edmund and Lucy, they still believe enough and they get whisked off to Narnia a couple of years later with their cousin who's in the photo here. His name is Eustace Scrub. Now Eustace is a pain in the backside. He's a problem. He's a nuisance. He lies, he steals, he complains. He's very difficult. And they're on this voyage in Narnia, this magical land. They've left the earth and gone to this magical land of Narnia, teamed up with Prince Caspian again. There's a whole book about Prince Caspian. And Eustace is a problem in this voyage, this voyage on the Dawn Treader, which is the ship. They end up at this island. And Eustace, being the brat that he is, he goes off into the wood of this island on his own. No one knows where he is. And he comes across a dragon's cave. And who knows what's in a dragon's cave? Treasure. And because he's a brat and he's greedy and he's selfish, he sees the treasure and he begins to like swim in the treasure and lay on the treasure. And he grabs this golden bracelet with all jewels in it and he puts it on his arm and it's all beautiful. But before he realizes, he turns into a dragon. He's greed and he's looking at the jewels and wanting those things. He turns into a dragon himself. This changes his attitude. This humbles him quite quickly. He somehow reintroduces himself back to the party that he's been on this voyage with. They realize that, Eustace, who's gone missing, is now the dragon. He's very helpful. He's cutting down trees and he's bringing them food and all kinds of things. But eventually they have to continue on the voyage from this island. And Eustace is probably going to be left behind because he's a dragon. He can't fly across the seas. He's too big for the boat. But who appears? In his moment of need, Aslan appears. The figure of Jesus appears. And he takes Eustace down into a pool of water. And he says to Eustace, while he's in this pool as a dragon, he says, undress yourself. Meaning, take off your dragon suit on the outside. Now, this is Aslan, so he can do anything, right? He can do miracles. And so Eustace just does just that. He begins peeling away at his dragon scales. He's trying to get this gold bracelet that's been stuck to his arm, digging into his skin. He's trying to get it off. And eventually, he actually peels off his dragonness. He peels it away, his dragon, like a suit. He peels it off himself and he throws it onto the ground. He looks behind him and there's the suit of a dragon there, but he looks down and he's still a dragon. Undress yourselves, Aslan says. So again, he peels with great pain and torment and difficulty, peels off this second layer of this like dragon suit, puts it on the ground, but he's still a dragon. And then Eustace tells the story that Aslan came and with his own claws, Eustace says, it hurt. It hurt a little bit, but Aslan ripped even deeper and ripped off this dragon suit and bathed him in the water, again revealing a young man, a young boy, Eustace, who is now transformed, not only in the outside, but on the inside. Only God can deal with the moral impurity in our heart. Some of you may have come to faith and it was a bit of a painful experience, like God ripped some stuff out of you and ripped some stuff off you and made some dramatic changes in your life as he bathed you and washed you and made you clean. Without Jesus Christ, you will live a life of trying to deal with your own impurity, your own dragonness, and you will rip off layer and layer because no one wants to be a dragon. No one wants to be separate. No one wants to be a leper. Nobody wants to be unclean. But in our human effort, we can try and rip off a layer. Maybe it's making lots of money. We can try and rip off a layer. We marry the girl that we fell in love with. We rip off another layer. We try and be someone. We go to the gym or we go on a diet or we get a new job. We can do all these kinds of things in our own strength to deal with our uncleanness. But like Aslan and Eustace, only Jesus can deal with your moral impurity, with death itself. I want us to take a moment today to pray around this. I want to take a moment today to look at the contagious power of Jesus that overwhelms the forces of death. I want to take a moment today to look into our own hearts, to recognize the dragonness that still may be there, the impurity that still may be there, the sense of being a leper, the sense of being like a corpse, the sense of being full of shame, guilt, uncleanness. If you're a Christian, then Jesus has already dealt with all of these things on the cross. So any sense that you have of these things are just an echo of the past. They are not who you are as a daughter, as a son of the living God. If you have not put your faith in Jesus Christ, then this is what Jesus offers: to deal with your dragonness, to wash you of your uncleanness, to take care of your so-called leprosy and bodily discharges and corpse-like life that just keeps returning back to death and destruction. Jesus offers life and fullness and hope and flourishing.